Welcome to 90 Day Fiancé WTF Podcast, a weekly hangout to talk about what the fuck we all just watch on TLC's 90 Day Fiancé. I am Nadia, and with me is my co-host, Lon.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Hey, Lon.
What's up?
I didn't know that you can bring peace and tranquility in your home by kicking around a coconut.
It's more of that ephah stuff, right? Covered in eggshells too, right?
Right. Is it? Oh my God. Did she do that?
I think it's supposed to be that's why the coconut was like white instead of brown, I think, because it was covered in like eggshell dust.
I thought it's because she shaved it. Didn't she shave it first and then that's when she kicked it around? I don't know.
She might have.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
It's an eggshell covered coconut.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely different. I am not familiar with ephah, so I apologize if anyone listening to our podcast practices ephah, but I promise you it's new to us, so that's why we're very fascinated with it. I wonder how much you paid Baba for that piece of advice. But yeah,
I thought they were gonna break a tile or something because coconuts are hard, and she was smashing it onto
she was smashing it
yeah
close
I was
to
like
his feet.
Yeah,
I was like, oh my God, you almost caused an injury. Yeah, let's talk about Danielle and Johan first, if you don't mind, Lon.
Yeah. So when the scene starts, she's kicking around the eggshells. She admits that it's been a rough couple of days, maybe a rough couple of weeks. And that's the reason she's kicking the coconut around in the first place. So again, we're not knocking ephah. This is some kind of ritual to bring peace into their home or to, you know, let whatever is causing problems, like protect them from those problems or whatever have you. So she's kicking coconut around the perimeter of their apartment for peace, to bring peace back into their relationship. And even then you can hear Johan, he says, am I the coconut? Like he says that. And I don't know if it was mistranslated or what, but to me, it felt like he also knows that there's tension there and that is that supposed to be me? And she's kicking me around the apartment. So even though it was said in jest, it was for me pretty telling. He laughs about it, ha ha ha, and they have a good time and stuff. But at the same time, it's not past him to be passive aggressive, you know, and to say, is that supposed to be me? Or for her even to be passive aggressive. But I thought that scene and the cake scene were kind of, I don't know, indicative of Danielle and her place in the relationship, with her kicking around the coconut and Johan insinuating that that was him. And then again with the cake and her having her way, and figuratively and quite literally speaking in this scene, she gets her cake, right? So it's, and she even says it, she goes, I get what I want. And I'm like, yeah we know. So yeah, what did you think about what happened during his birthday party, his surprise birthday party, which he planned?
Yeah, I felt that was very polarizing because earlier on that day, he was so affectionate towards her. I rewatched the episode and he was complimenting her on her looks, saying she's cute and everything. And things seems to be going well until he gave that toast and forgot all about Danielle being the person that actually organized the entire surprise party. And I thought that was very insulting and very demeaning, especially when someone else had to call it out.
Right.
And
he doubled down like, oh, I said thank you to her.
Yeah.
And then he just.
Yeah, like I say, it was very insulting. And I don't blame her from walking away from it, because I would be upset as well if I were in his shoes. And then for him to come after her and tell her, like, it's because of you insisting on me meeting your ex, and which then caused me to be upset. I'm like, that's a weak ass reason. That's super childish.
Yeah.
I hate to admit it, but I guess in that particular scenario, I have to take Danielle's side of it and agree that it shows his immaturity. Like, he couldn't just let it go for one night, be cordial or be grateful, you know, show a united front as a couple in front of the extended family. And you can tell they were surprised as well. I guess Danielle really went above and beyond to put together this whole family gathering. And he has a lot of family too. So imagine like the amount of time and effort she has to spend. And you think back, right? Getting the cake.
Right.
And then organizing it with his family members behind his back and surprising him. It's just, yeah, I would be very upset.
It was very hurtful. And I think what struck me about this scene too was she wasn't intentionally trying to hurt Johan when she did that. He's like, well, you know, you ruined my birthday when you said this a day before my birthday. You hurt me, you know, and I don't think she was trying to be hurtful. And she was actually trying to have a conversation about it. Whereas this seemed like he was intentionally out to hurt her. And,
yeah,
you know, saying, well, not being grateful for the effort that she put into this, that's hurtful for anybody who's actually gone out of their way to do something special for somebody they love. And then to feel not just underappreciated, but that the other person isn't really even grateful for it, really hurts. So I was definitely hurting for Danielle during this scene. An interesting thing, though, when I went on Twitter, there were some good counter arguments. So let me first say this before I say what I'm about to say, but I think both of them can be wrong. You can both be wrong. I think he was wrong in what, not just what he did, but how he handled it later. But I think now that I'm reading some of the counter arguments to this scene, I think she also could have been wrong too. So what other people are saying, the counter argument is, okay, now she's turning his birthday celebration, she's making it all about her, and which is what she always does. And I'm like, huh, like she's the one that stormed off and she's the one that now he's having to come placate her. And the family is right there. Like, could she have also said, okay, this is a conversational table for later. I put all this effort into making his birthday special. We're going to have a talk later. But she made it about her. And I'm like, okay.
I can see that too.
Yeah. And she's like, I'm going to get up, I'm storm off, and I'm not coming back. You know, and he had to come get her and try to talk to her. And then, no, I'm leaving. You go spend time with your family. And it's not about his birthday anymore. Now it's about you and how you feel and you getting hurt about this and all the effort you put into it. And somebody was like, whatever happened to doing something to do it, you know, rather than doing something and expecting thanks and gratitude and in return, you know what I mean? It wasn't completely altruistic. She wants the credit for it. Yeah. And I'm like, okay. So I can see both. But like I said, both of them can be wrong in this scenario. I think they're both wrong.
Yeah, now that you put it that way, I can definitely see her, and I wouldn't discount it, right? Because Danielle is not one of my favorite cast members for this particular season. Yeah, I can definitely see her being like, oh, the spotlight has to be on me. Mm-hmm. Let me walk off. Let me make a statement in front of his family. Though I don't blame her for doing that, because I think she knows that.
I think she was justified personally.
Yeah, she was
That's where I stand on it. I definitely think she was justified, because for me, it would hurt so much where I would feel like crying, and I wouldn't want them to see me like that.
Right.
I wouldn't want to be the one at the table being weird, awkward, and like fighting tears, and the family's going, hey, Lon,
then
you okay?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I'd rather just get up and go take a walk.
Exactly. Like, you don't want to be that person that's like sulking in the corner and people are like, is she okay? You know?
Right.
Yeah. And then it really brings the attention to her.
Yeah. Nudging your partner going, you should go talk to her.
Yeah.
You fucked up what you said. You should go. No, that's already weird. Like,
exactly. And I think too, I don't know why I kind of was in my feelings as well. Like, I got the feels, is because what Johan did is so alpha male. And I think Danielle had brought this up before, where she knows that he's very patriarchal and he's so like, okay, I'm men, you know, I have a penis.
Yeah.
I'm right. And I think that was his way of flexing to his family members that, oh yeah, I know that she organized this, but you know, I thanked her already. You know, this is about y'all and me. Like, yeah, she knows that, you know, that I thanked her. That's why I said I used the word demeaning, because I just felt like he could give her credit in front of everyone to show that, yeah, my wife is wonderful, she did this for me, I'm super grateful. But instead, he dismisses her, and he is very denigrating. And I just...
That was the wrong time for him to be like passive aggressive and
right.
to throw a punch. That
right.
was
not in front of your family
belt.
members.
Yeah, right. And especially she's the one that put this all together in the first place.
She probably paid for it too.
Yeah. Ugh.
So, I mean, I'm not a fan of what she did at the bakery because I thought, oh, what a freaking entitled Karen. He already explained the baker's done for the day. And I hate it when Americans try to compare their experience back home and trying to get the same experience in a foreign country. Like, you have to remember, you're not in New York anymore. Like, just because in New York, people are very accommodating or they're flexible. They're like, oh, yeah, you want to write happy birthday? Yeah, here you go. Let me give you the icing. It's different elsewhere, you know?
Right.
So I just don't like how she haggled her way just to inconvenience someone. And I think he saw the camera crew and he was like, all right, well, I better play ball because this might reflect badly on the bakery that I'm working at. So kudos to him for accommodating to her. But I just thought her behavior was kind of vile. Like, I get it. She's doing it in the most friendly and, you know, she framed it in a way where, oh my God, I can't believe you guys don't do this here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, if he said the bakers have gone home, they've gone home. Like, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
If you want to ruin your cake, that's on you, but just buy it from me and then go your way. Like, you don't have to, like, ask me to, like, write his name or something. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and she could have easily, too, went somewhere to buy piping. If you want to do it yourself, go do it yourself. Then,
yeah.
You know, yeah, but she's like, no, can you give me the thing? And he's
yeah.
like...
Yeah, and I don't know about y'all, but if I were to buy a birthday cake, I either get a cake that already has the word happy birthday on it, or I will pre-order if I want to customize it with a name or something, right? You don't just show up and expect a baker or a bakery to suddenly accommodate to your request, especially if it's later in the day when, you know, obviously they close shop, they close the machines, and, you know, these folks wake up really early in the morning to start baking. So she's just being so inconsiderate and so caring about it. I just,
That was so Danielle, that scene.
So Danielle, yeah. Definitely so Danielle. Anyway, let's move on to something a little bit more lighthearted, but also a little frustrating. And I'm talking about Gabe's inability to produce the most important document.
Yeah.
That he needs in order to proceed with registering their marriage, which I think we talked about in our previous recording. It's not that Colombia doesn't allow same-sex marriage, but I think I am quite suspicious of this because I wonder if this is another drummed up fake drama that TLC is trying to sell to us. But I also can see how government bureaus want that consistency.
All right.
In your naming, in your gender. So I can see this being a fact, or, you know, this is a real thing that can happen to people who transition and they're like, well, I don't have papers. And they're like, well, we need you to be consistently male on all your government papers or something, you know? So I can see that happening, but I can also relate to Isabel's frustration because myself, I've gone through like immigration and I know producing a lot of paperwork is so frustrating. And if your sponsors doesn't do a good job at putting everything together, it can be the most annoying and inconvenient thing ever because it's a lot. And I think Isabel, after the proposal, she's probably thinking, let's just plan for the wedding now. Let's start planning the wedding. And then this happened. And obviously, it's a bum on the road for them.
Right. And like what you said, Nadia, I too felt... this scene might be contrived. I was like, does he really need to go back? Can this stuff be handled online? And another question was, like, technically the documentation is still correct. So in the trans community, this is what's known as AFAB or AFAB, meaning assigned female at birth. And at birth, like, Gabe was assigned female. So the documentation is still correct. And yeah, his updated documentation is going to reflect male. All that actually shows is that proves the transition. He's like, all my transition proof is gone. No, it's not. If all your other documents say male, and then this one says your birth certificate agrees you were assigned female at birth, maybe I don't know enough about laws and shit like that, especially, you know, in a place like Medellin or wherever they're at in Colombia.
Yeah.
But technically that documentation is still like correct. And there's just a lot of questions. And then again, even when she was upset, I felt Isabel was overplaying like how upset she was. Like she looked really pissed off and I can't believe you did this. And he's just like, I didn't know. I had no idea I was going to come here and meet you. And we were going to go through this thing where the documentation was going to be like super important. She's like, well, it was important. I can't believe this. And
yeah,
even in some of the conversations online, people are like, yo, is it me or does she seem like too mad, like overly mad? And I'm like, no, it does. Because the next scene, she's like diving into his backpack. And I was like, this is so fucking cute. Yeah, I was like, I had to take a photo of that and post it because it was just a quick reminder of how adorable they really are.
Yep.
When maybe producers and directors aren't asking them to amp it up for the cameras or whatever, because they were all like laughing and happy again. And I was like, okay, this is the couple I'm used to seeing. But
yeah,
you know, when she was all pissed and like giving him the cold shoulder and kind of raising her voice, and he's just like, I didn't know.
Yeah.
It was like, it's far from the patient person who was there when he landed and he was like, oh, my business is going to fall apart and I don't have all these papers. And she's like, it's fine. We'll get it. What do you need? What materials do you need? What papers do you need? Remember when he thought his business was going to shit and she was like, I got you. I got you. I got you. Where was that, Isabel? She's like, you fucked up, you know?
Yeah. Maybe she felt like for the business thing, she can help control the situation. Like it's under control. Whereas his paperwork, it sounds like it's a lot of things that he needs to dig up and
she was process. Helpless.
Yeah, she felt helpless.
She's like,
that's
I can't do it. You had to handle this and you didn't.
Especially because it involves him flying back.
Mm.
And I think that's where the frustration comes from. And I don't blame her. I think, too, that when she found out that Gabe hasn't told his family, she didn't really freak out. Like, she was pretty like, okay, well, remember when you go back, just remember to tell them.
Yeah.
Like, she was pretty chill about it. I think they're trying their best to play up the drama, but IRL, they're
because everything is so smooth.
Adorable.
It's yeah, everything is like, oh well, the mom's like, I think it's a bit too soon, but you have my blessing anyway.
Yeah.
Everything is just all the ways
no
this
drama.
Could go wrong, it's not. Yeah, so
yeah.
They're like, we got to think of something, guys. Like, this is happening too fast. The season isn't over yet. What do we got to do for you guys? Send him back.
Yeah, and maybe it was intentionally done that way. Maybe Gabe wasn't meant to stay long in Colombia and they had to come up with some drama to make him fly back. Because I think, didn't they give us a sneak peek of the tell-all and he was there without her?
I think I missed that because someone mentioned that and I didn't actually see the sneak peek of the tell.
Yeah, it was very interesting what Gabe said during the tell-all, especially about the next couple that we're going to talk about. He mentioned something about not believing Chris. And I'm there with him.
Yeah,
let's talk about that.
So, 3 months? Holy crap. Like in the preview, she says, oh, you didn't speak to me in a month. So my assumption was she'd only been there a month. And the entire time she was there, she didn't call Jamie. She's been gone 3 fucking months. It was, I think she was saying, oh, you've only spoken to me X amount of times in a month. Mm-hmm. But the total amount of time she's been gone has been 3 months.
Yeah.
And obviously the question is about the finances, which seemed fine before she left and is suspiciously super, super low now. Like, She was talking about the food truck, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, she was also talking about, oh, I'll be there in 2 weeks and I'll be able to fly back. So like she wasn't worried about how much it was going to cost to fly back in 2 weeks. Never mind that it's not taking her 2 weeks to get back. Yeah. And then the motorcycle, what happened to the 50K? Like, did you get that situated? Like, isn't it worth 50K? Did you get it back? Can't you sell it? Like, the math ain't mathin. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I mean. And for me, too, one of the things that rubbed me the wrong way was this whole money thing. She was the one that kind of convince Jamie to quit her job.
Yes.
Yes, Jamie wanted to leave. And yes, they were like, well, you can leave or whatever. But I think Jamie is responsible enough to go, no, like, I need to stick around. But Chris was like, well, if you want to, I got us. Like, I got us. And then she's gonna guilt trip her. I felt that she was kind of guilt tripping her about the whole money situation. And like, I don't think it's really about the money for Jamie. Jamie is like, look, it's not about the money. And I understand, y'all, don't get me wrong. I understand love isn't enough. You still need to be able to afford things. So I get Chris's argument. Do I believe it 100%? I don't. Because even if you're working, you can still take make time out of your day.
Exactly.
Spend a few minutes to call your wife.
Yep.
At the end of the day. Yeah. Yep.
And for that reason, I think Chris is easily a really bad wife in that sense, because the part about her, you know, working to try to make money to support Jamie is horseshit. Like, I think that it's just an excuse not to go back. Because then why else would she not be in a hurry to be with Jamie? Especially since you married this woman. Like, if you really love her, you wouldn't be able to not keep in touch with her. And the fact that Jamie was so genuinely upset that she hasn't seen Chris in months, even through like chats and video calls, I guess video calls mainly, like, that's just astounding to me. That tells you that Chris has a bigger problem, and I'm starting to sort of believe that she's probably an addict.
Like burning through the money, right?
Yeah. So let me just read some of the comments I found online that made me sort of...
Let's hear it.
Yeah. So someone said, ever known a closet alcoholic who was constantly coming up with reasons to go out to the garage? Basically, that's Chris, except going out to the garage is getting on a plane back to the States. Also, addicts and alcoholics claim to be narcoleptics all the time because it explains passing out on the phone and in other inappropriate situations.
Yes.
And then this is the other thing, the other theory. Someone said, anyone else find it weird that she hasn't randomly fallen asleep on camera yet? If her narcolepsy is so bad, wouldn't TLC catch it at least once? And another person also made a comment. In 2023, I find it hard to believe you cannot resolve relocating with your bank digitally or over the phone. That's definitely very telling.
Right.
I don't know why you have to fly back just to handle financial situation when all you need to do is make a phone call.
Right.
Like, for example, and this is, again, someone gave an example. This person's mom's credit card got hacked and her mom is so not tech savvy, but she could still make a call to Wells Fargo while she was doing some missionary work, apparently in Moldova or something, where Andre is from. And she was able to get Wells Fargo to send her a credit card to replace the fraud one. So I don't know what the actual financial situation is with Chris, but to jump on a plane to go back to the States is just like a very poor excuse on her part. When everything can be done digitally and over the phone, you know, why would you want to spend money just to go back? In a large country like Colombia, you're telling me that you cannot find a medication that doesn't serve your needs? Like, come on.
Yep. And wasn't the plan was to sell her house? Like, that's money.
Yeah.
I thought she was going to sell her house to live
in. She had two houses, I think. One, I think she said she was going to hand down to her kids. And then the other one was... Yeah, I have to watch that again. I think she mentioned it during the first episode. Yeah. So this whole situation is so weird. And plus, Jamie said that she had COVID again.
Yeah.
So if you know your wife has COVID and she needs you to be there for her, you can't tell me that you cannot drop everything and be there for her. Like, that's just, I'm a bit triggered because I know what being abandoned feels like. And Chris's excuse of like, I'm so busy making money for you. It's like, no, like you said, Lon, let's recap what she did, right? She told Jamie to rent an apartment, kind of guilt trip her that the apartment was slightly expensive. They furnish it. Remember, they went to the furniture shop and they tried to furnish it. It looks like Jamie covered Chris's expenses while they were in Colombia. Like, I remember Jamie was paying for her medication, the opioid, I guess, or the painkiller. I'm sure they spent a ton of money on the wedding. And like you said, Chris gave Jamie permission to quit her job. And then she just up and left.
Right. It's
Makes
always
sense.
something. It's always
Yeah, always something.
something. Yeah.
She's an addict.
Yeah.
She's an addict. And we're just watching an addict just get away with bad relationship decisions
Yeah.
and choices. So I saw bits and pieces of the tell-all preview, and I think she's really trying to paint the picture that she's a sugar mama. And Jamie is like
No.
sucking on her tit financially. And I think that's not cool.
Yeah. Like, I get she can feel underappreciated,
sure,
which was kind of the defense she put up on this episode.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't understand all the things I'm doing for her and all that. But it takes more than just sending money.
Money,
like,
yeah.
and communication is an easy thing to do, like, mm-hmm. with the technology we have now. So you can make time. And I think Jamie wouldn't feel so bad if she was communicating more frequently. You know what I mean? And letting her know what the update is, which makes me also wonder, why is Chris not? Is she hiding something? Like, why is she unavailable? It can't be just work.
Yeah.
That's making her unavailable. There's just a lot of eyebrow raising questions here.
Lots of gaps, for sure. Yeah, lots
for
of
sure.
Gaps. Well, shall we talk about Debbie and Osama, which I kind of have a lot of opinions about?
Yeah, I didn't have much to say. For me, the scene felt awkward. It got better towards the later part of it when the family was all laughing and they seemed to accept her. But I thought it was really hilarious in the beginning. One, I think Osama's family was very welcoming. As welcoming as they could be for seeing someone for the first time. Someone who he didn't tell his parents about or his family about, right, initially? Or did they know?
I think they know that she's American.
Yeah.
But they don't know that she's planning to stay there permanently, is what Debbie found out.
I think they were super, super welcoming. I think the sister, especially Newton, knows a little bit English and was trying her best. But the mom was making me crack up because the mom looked so uncomfortable.
Awkward.
Yeah, like side-eyeing and stuff.
Yes.
Just,
I know.
Yeah.
I tweeted something like that, and I was going to use the word side-eye because she does look like, what is this woman saying? Like,
right.
I just... She seems so uncomfortable, and
yeah,
she just
very
wanted everything to be
uncomfortable.
Over quickly.
Very, very, very
Yeah.
uncomfortable. That was all from my end. Please, I want to hear what you have to say.
So first of all, I'm not a fan of Debbie, and we've heard this term mansplaining, but I just don't like when Debbie women-splain how to load her luggage to Osama. Like, she was like, oh yeah, that turn it sideways. Yeah. And I was like, oh gosh, like, I'm pretty sure the guy can figure it out. But yeah, let's start there first. I think from the preview, we see that, and again, this could be really good TLC editing, but it seems like Osama once again blindsided her by telling her that, no, you're bringing me to the US.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I'm like, okay, now it makes sense. Now it makes sense. He's playing the long game. And I tweeted that. I stand by it in a way because, I mean, if you look at Osama, I'm like, okay, yeah, I can tell why maybe he's not having any luck dating locally. But it just felt like he's targeting her for a reason. And now we know the reason.
Right.
Because
I think
it.
She was pretty clear to him that the
that she's
plan
moving to
was
him.
to stay there
Yes.
all along.
Yeah.
You know, unlike Danielle, who flipped it at the last second and was like, oh, I'm staying. And
yep.
Johan's like, oh, what? This is news to me.
Yeah.
This shouldn't be news to Osama. Like,
yes.
This was the plan. This is why she left. Even when she got mad at him in the earlier episode, she said, oh, I heard a lot of people like to come here because I want to be here. And he didn't mention it that time. So for him to flip it, you know, in the preview, like, oh no, I'm coming to, you're taking me. Like, oh,
yeah.
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
This is news to me.
And maybe that's why his family accepts her, because they're like, well, she's rescuing our son.
Yeah.
She's bringing him over. And again, y'all, I feel bad because people still think about, hey, life is so much better in the US. Hate to break it to you. I mean, it's okay. But I can see why people want to come here and they think like, oh yeah, we're going to have a better life. And they're obviously welcome to. I'm not saying that you cannot or you shouldn't, but not at the expense of like playing, toying with someone's heart, you know? Like it seems like Debbie is really into him.
Right.
You know, like she time and again reminded us that this is her chance at happiness, even though her son gave her such a hard time. And now I guess her son is right because he does have a motive. And I'm only focusing on 90 Day Fiancé because I feel like we've seen this before where, and hate to use this word again, but you have those Tunisian love rat or Moroccan love rat or, you know, and unfortunately, I don't know who came up with this term, but it does sound derogatory, but folks who purposely date older women, older American women, just to come here only for them to like leave said older American women. For example, who was it? Muhammad and
I forget her name, but I know.
Yeah,
who
I
you're
forgot
talking
her
about.
name. Yeah, but you know, right? Like the moment he came here and they didn't kiss during
they
their
didn't kiss
wedding.
Or anything. Yeah,
yeah, I guess it didn't consummate. Maybe I
he
forgot.
He was dating someone already. It was already so bad. Like that was so bad.
Yeah, and then even recently with that guy that, again, also called Muhammad.
And also dating another, or seeing some, or flirting with somebody. That was, yeah, it's
and
the pattern.
Yeah, we see a pattern here. So, like, I just feel bad for Debbie because I think Debbie really got us all hyped up and, you know, like buying into her fairy tale romance. And then now we're starting to see, oh, yeah, Osama does want something in return.
Yeah.
This is not like an even exchange. Well, it is an exchange. It's like, oh, you want to be with me? Okay, well, you got to take me back with you to the US.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he's going to be as happy as he thinks. And then that might even give him the reason to like exit the relationship while he's already here. Because I'm glad you brought up her son. Because if he's going to be part of Debbie's family, he's going to have to hear from her son. And if this is the way that it's going to happen on these terms, where Debbie didn't even want to bring him in the first place, and this is how you're going to meet her son, it's not a good look.
Oh, yeah. No. And her son's a cop.
Yeah.
You don't want to fuck around with cops.
Yeah.
He can try. He can try to come and see how he likes it.
Oh, he's going to find out. He's going to fuck
gonna
around
find
and
out.
Find out.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. So let's end it with Rishi. And
was he pulling her leg, though?
I don't know. I don't think so, but I can see his point because I feel like he did say the photo is out there in social media. So it's like, for
Yeah,
public
I thought that
consumption.
Scored a point with me too. I'm like, if it's already out, I thought so too.
Yeah, it's like
that's
you're
funny you
copying a
mentioned
link.
That. I thought so too. Yeah,
You know what I mean? Like, I'm just giving you a link to my photo, and then, yeah, that's how I see it. But obviously, it does come across as like thirst trap, and we talked about this before.
The red roses photo for me was like, because he sent a photo of red roses, and I was
right.
Okay, that's that's worse. To me, that's worse than the topless pic. The topless pic, you can explain away like, oh, it's one of my modeling pics. It's already on Instagram. Okay, why'd you send her red roses, though?
Yeah.
What's that about?
Explain
And then I was
that.
I was like, I don't know. You guys, I'm listening, Rishi.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about her friends first. It's good that you have friends who look out for you, for sure. But I feel like her friends are, it's like misery loves company with her friends, you know? Like, I feel Jen should draw a boundary with her friend. It's like, okay, you can advise me this much or this far along. But once you cross this line, like, okay, I don't need you to catfish my boyfriend. I don't need you to, like, be so involved. You know what I mean? Like, I think at some point you have to draw the line and be like, okay, my friends cannot get involved in our relationship. This has to be me and him trying to figure things out. But I think with her friends coming over, which obviously is a setup by TLC, I think it just delays the progress of this relationship. Not that Rishi is the one. I feel like, I don't know, the jury's still out for me when it comes to Rishi. But I also feel bad because it just feels like he's being tag team against. You know, he's being ganged up is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And Rishi, he's not doing a good job at explaining how Indian matchmaking is. Because the way he explains to Jen is like, my parents showed me several in a day. And Jen's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I think he's trying to tell her that, and this is me pulling from experience watching the Netflix show Indian Matchmaking, which I got into again. And it's basically them reviewing bio data, like resumes, you know? So I don't know.
I know what you mean by that.
Yeah.
I felt like he was, okay, let me backtrack. Let me say he did make some mistakes. He didn't make the best decisions when it came to the DMs and stuff. I'll be flat out with that.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely made some mistakes. There's some parts where he could justify it and some other parts that seem really sus. But aside from that, when they were at lunch and stuff, I understood kind of what he was saying, where like, oh, well, it went down like this. And, well, you said that your family was doing this and we're looking for this. Yeah, that's true. But it's not as malicious as you're making it out to be. That,
right.
Like, they kept making it seem like they had some, like, gotcha moments.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, why'd you say that? If that's true, then why? But, well, no, because they can both be true. Like, they were still looking for me, but that doesn't mean I was dating those people or entertaining those people. They've definitely been looking for me and brought all these pictures of girls and stuff to, you know, and you, like you said, he's not doing a really great job. And they keep thinking they've got him tripped up and stuff. I'm like,
yeah.
Not really, but you're actually not explaining it to them very well. And maybe that's a language barrier, you know? And circling back to her friends, like you said, set some boundaries, because I really do think they're out to ruin the relationship. And again, like what you said, I'm so in agreement with everything you said. I don't really think Rishi is the one per se. Maybe they can work that out. I think her friends definitely bring up some good points, which is what any good friend should be doing, should be concerned. But I also didn't really like the energy that they were bringing. There was something about their energy that was like very like, oh, we're going to ruin this guy. You know what I mean? It was just so super negative. They were definitely out to get him. I really wasn't feeling it. I don't want to say mean girl energy, but it was definitely giving off, we're single, we don't like men, and we don't want you to like him either.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Misery
like
loves
that
company.
Kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like you said, misery loves company. Like they were going to lose a member of their single ladies club or whatever, and they're
right.
fighting to keep her, you know?
Yeah, and I think too, it's almost like they took it upon themselves to look after her affairs, because previously they did warn her about her ex-husband, or because remember what was it, Randy or Myra, who said, well, we did tell her that we hated her last
and he
husband.
She married him anyway.
And she married him anyway. Yeah, she married him anyway. So it's like, I think now they over-inserted themselves into this current relationship, which is already pretty unstable, I would say, or it's still in its, you know, discovery phase in a way. But as much as I feel bad for Rishi, I still think that he should have been more forthcoming with his parents, especially when they keep shoving those matchmaking, I keep saying bio data because it does come across like a resume type of thing to him, because then he could have just said, look, you guys can stop the search. I'm engaged to someone else.
Right.
It's that easy. Do it like man up. Just say that. And maybe he did. And this is all fake drama, but
yeah,
I don't know.
There's so many missteps. And like I said, he hasn't been making the best decisions. And yeah, there are some good points to be made. But there are also some opportunities where he can explain himself better. Like, if all you're going to say is, oh, we got to wait another 2 months, of course they're going to be like, that's bullshit. He's just fucking dangling the carrot again. But if you're like, you know what, actually, in our culture, astrology is really important. You should actually go see a previous season when they actually showed the stars and when's the best time. And I consulted somebody and I'm only looking out for our best interest because I want us to succeed. So I went to an astrologer to say, hey, when is the best time? Because I want the greatest chance of success. Right.
Yeah.
And he's not. Just like,
yeah,
they're just going to think you're saying, oh, another 2 months, another two. You know, again, like I said, dangling the carrot, right? Like, well, you just got to wait. You just got to wait. Like, are you going to give them more context about that? Or are you just going to let them think that you're stalling again?
Yeah. And if our listeners are skeptical about this whole astrology thing, check out what Sumit and Jenny went through, because they did consult astrology as well, but also the documentary Indian Matchmaking, which I think the new season is coming out this Friday. The matchmaker, who's very well known amongst the elite, wealthy, upper class Indians, she uses astrology a lot. Like, she would take pictures of her clients and go to a face reader for him or her, give her the reading, and it determines whether or not they're destined to be together. And it's a big thing in India. It's part of their culture. So I totally buy it that 2nd of August, 4 p.m. is the thing.
It's 4 p.m.
So yeah, I mean, I know it sounds like BS to the Western eye or ear, but it is a thing in Indian culture. So you're dating an Indian guy. So, all right, Lon, anything else? Because otherwise, let's wrap it up with our WTF moment.
WTF, it's a toss-up. I am going to go with Chris this time. It's just hard to believe. And even if I were to take everything that Chris says at face value and just say, okay, you are, and just to believe her 100%, you are, you're working hard, and, you know, you're supporting you and Jamie, I just don't think that's a strong enough excuse to not communicate. According to Jamie, you've only communicated like maybe 3 times in an entire month or something. I forget the exact number. And you've been gone 3 months. And this is somebody who already thinks you're not coming back.
Yeah.
So you need to constantly nurture your marriage with communication. Like, it's not enough to just say, look, I'm paying bills. You know, and that, again, opens up a can of worms. Why can't you be on the phone? Why can't you FaceTime? You can't be that busy where you can't figure out a few minutes a day or a few minutes a week, even. If she's only seeing you 3 times in an entire month, what is going on here? So that, to me, was a huge WTF.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. So I guess I got to pick another WTF. I want to say it's also a toss-up between Danielle's
and
haggling.
That was my toss-up. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll pick that then. It's her haggling at the bakery, which I thought was super entitled of her. And yeah, she was trying to act cute and, you know, acting all innocent and like puppy-eyed and be like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys don't do this here. Yeah. You know, excuse. But again, like, I feel like because we know what she's capable of and what she has been portraying herself as, it just feels like I cannot excuse that behavior. I just find that it's very annoying and very entitled of her.
Entitled, yeah.
Yeah, so that's my WTF moment. And that's not to say I don't feel bad for her afterwards when Johan did her dirty. But yeah, Danielle, like, not cool. Not cool. I mean, I'm glad that, you know, that person accommodated in the end, but I feel like it's the equivalent of, and maybe this is a bad equivalence, but you know, when you're on the plane and you're sitting in like, I don't know, maybe a 3-seater, and then someone comes up to you and say like, hey, do you mind if we exchange seats? Because the airline separated me from my partner or from my children. And you're like, but I picked this seat.
Yeah.
Why do I have to give it to you? Like, you know what I mean? And people tug at your heart and they like, oh my God, like, you know, I'm the victim here, blah, blah, blah. But right. Hey, if it's poor planning, how is it my fault?
Right. You know? Am I the asshole here, y'all? Come on.
Yeah, right?
Oh, I'm the asshole. I don't want to give it the seat that like, I planned and paid for. And I just happen to like the aisles. Like, I need to be here because I'm insecure about bugging other people to use the restroom. Like, I did this. Like, why do I got to give this shit?
Yeah. All right, Lon, before we close up, as usual, anything that you want to plug away or anything that you want to talk about?
Not really. I hadn't seen the finale yet or the reunion of Love is Blind, so I would have been talking about that today, but we'll get to that maybe next time.
Yeah. I would say go check out Indian Matchmaking because it definitely opened your eyes to the world of matchmaking. Though I have to say, matchmaking isn't an Indian thing, but they do it really well.
Yeah. Now, this is like you were mentioning earlier, this is like the wealthy elite though, right? Or is this kind of a normal, like also typical, like just for the show? I mean,
yeah, I think the show features a very famous matchmaker, and her clientele happens to be people who can afford her. Her fees goes anywhere from $1,500 to $8,000. She does fly from US to India a lot, and I think in the next season she's actually going to go to the UK. So yeah, it does highlight, or it features a lot of rich Indians living in India and the United States. There are a little bit of colorism, a little bit of caste system in play, and her methods are sort of questionable because I think she attributes her success to keeping you in check. For example, you may have 10 things that you're looking for in a partner. She will be quick to tell you that, hey, in order to be successful in this, you can only expect 60 to 70%.
I think I watched an episode of the first season and she was shooting people down. Yeah.
Yeah. She definitely shot a lot of people's like fantasies down. And I think what I like also about the documentary is that there are some people who are very adamant about finding their true love through conventional methods. And by that, I mean without her help in matchmaking. And I think there's this chick called Aparna who she ended up not going with Auntie Seema. Seema is the name of the matchmaker, or Seema Auntie is how they address her. So she ended up not believing in her methods because she's very westernized, having grown up in the US. She's from, I think, Houston, Texas. So she's like, yeah, you know what? Your methods are okay, but I don't buy it. So they still follow Aparna's journey. And it's just very interesting to watch how she matches people, and she keeps it real, you know, like an aunt like who's trying to matchmake you. And again, I think people should watch it with an open mind because matchmaking isn't really an Indian thing per se, because my parents will matchmake. Matchmaking still happens in a lot of other culture, whether it's a particular ethnicity with another ethnicity or a particular religion sticking to the same religion.
Yeah.
So it's still prevalent out there. And
I think it happens here on a day-to-day basis. It's just not as official.
Yeah.
But don't tell me people haven't said, oh, why don't you try dating so-and-so? Or
yeah,
I know somebody at church who you might like, or, you know, one of my friends at the book club has a really pretty daughter, you know, like it fucking happens, y'all. Like, don't sit there and act like this is not happening right
now. Yeah, exactly. Like I was watching, what was it? Kim's Convenience, the comedy based on a Korean family in Canada. I think in the first episode of season one, they told their daughter, why don't you find a nice Korean boy who goes to church? Like, there you go. That checks ethnicity,
right?
Nationality,
yeah,
and religion.
Religion.
So I would say it's interesting how the Indians do it, because they do it in a very social networking style where like they exchange each other's like bio data, which turns out to be like a relationship resume, right? And then it gets circulated. But then like with this particular matchmaker, she gets the best of the best, I guess you can call it, because her fees are so high. So she deals with mostly wealthier, I guess you can also say the upper caste people of India.
That makes it a lot more interesting to me, actually. Like the way you described it, the different layers of complexity.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, like, oh, we're going to run into some colorism. We're going to run into the caste. You know what I mean? And just the aspect of being part of that, I guess, wealthy, the societal aspect of it and how that plays into the show.
Yeah, like earlier on, I listened to this podcast and this Indian guy chimed in about it too and said, you know, what's frustrating is that they have yet to cover, or at least Seema Auntie hasn't really dealt with same-sex couple in this day and age. So I guess it's not part of her clientele. And also, I think she hasn't dealt with other Indians in the form of Muslim Indians. Like, she hasn't done Pakistani people. So
there's some exclusivity to it.
Yeah. Exclusion and exclusivity too, because I think maybe she doesn't want to deal with like...
I think exclusion was the word I was actually looking for. Yeah.
Yeah, but also exclusivity because, again, she deals with the upper caste and like, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I'm going to take a stab. It's the ones that she has serviced before are people of Gujarati and Sikhs and mainly Hindi practitioner. So it's like she stick to those folks mainly as a clientele. She hasn't helped a Muslim couple. She hasn't helped same-sex couple. She's helped like different nationality for sure, but she hasn't gone deep dive into like other types of
It's
couples.
still kind of a narrow, I guess, demographic of
Correct.
people that she's looking for.
Yeah. And usually people who can afford her services and who probably sign contracts with her and be like, yeah, we'll pay for your first class ticket to the US, you know, or whatever, right? So, but yeah, very interesting. If you just watch it and just kind of switch off on the wokeness a little bit, hopefully you won't be offended. But it's just very interesting to follow people's journey and how they got burned or they match up really well. And then you see the Indian style weddings and all that, you know, glitz and glamour.
And you'll get a better appreciation for couples like Rishi and Sumit, where they're like, hey, what did the stars have to say about us?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, like Seema Aunty actually believe in astrology. Like she will go out of her way to have her clients' faces read just so she can actually sell her services better, right? When she comes back to you and say, actually, I'm giving you this resume or this bio data because your faces matches or you're destined according to the astrologer. Then it's like, oh yeah. And you'll be surprised, even in this day and age, her clientele, and they are people who are doctors, who are cardiologists, attorneys, entrepreneurs, they still buy that.
How influential that is.
Yeah. They still uphold that tradition and that belief system. And it's just very fascinating. I enjoy watching this type of shows. But
it makes me want to binge it right now.
Yeah, I binged it in one sitting. I remember I watched season one and I didn't realize that there was season two. And then I saw that season three is coming out this Friday. So I was like, okay, I better catch up. And it has that Love is Blind element where you're like really invested because you will kind of feel for some of these cast members, right? Because they go to mixers and then they're supposed to stick to one person, but then they kind of like fell for another person only for their heart to be broken. So it's like Love is Blind, but you know, Indian matchmaking.
With the twist to it, right?
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, I would encourage anyone to watch it and peek into the world of Indian matchmaking. All right. So other than that, I think that's it from us. Lon, anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. Be kind to one another.
Always.
Always.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening, WTFers. If you love the podcast, give us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. It is appreciated and really helps us out. You can also find us under listener support on anchor.fm and donate for as low as 99 cents or on Patreon at WTF Extra. You can engage with us on email, Twitter, and Instagram at 90 Day Fiancé WTF. We especially would like to hear what your WTF moments are each episode. We might even shout you out. Don't forget to like, share, and follow the podcast.